Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 109.
This week on the podcast, the war on masculinity claims another victim as the war on guns continues amassing a staggering record of defeat after defeat.
Feminism is in vogue this month, so try it.
If Daryl Issa can't win Benghazi, he's going to make sure nobody can.
And Ukraine is either at war with itself or with Russia. Nobody can be sure, but one thing that is for sure is that everybody is dying.
Obama's latest drawdown proposal brings up the important question of why we still have troops in Afghanistan to begin with.
And the volunteer state will not be stopped by socialist Europe when it comes to murdering its own citizens in cruel and unusual ways.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Do it.
Do it. That's where you should go.
Yeah.
And then you should probably find us on like Twitter.
On Twitter.
Facebook.
And on Tumblr. You can go find our genius gun manifesto that we wrote.
That never stops being relevant.
Never stops being relevant. I said to Lila, we should post this every time that there is another mass shooting.
Right.
And we're going to do that. And there was one this week.
Right.
Sadly.
So good timing.
Ugh, God.
Terrible timing.
Slash
good timing for posting a gun manifesto from people who don't believe in guns.
Right. Oh, boy. So, y'all know what happened.
Right. We're Santa Barbara, the idyllic community setting of Meryl Streep's character in It's Complicated.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, when I think of Santa Barbara, I only think of that movie because as much as that movie kind of frustrated me for other reasons and was way too long, she had like this very like perfectly Santa Barbara house, and then she owned this like perfectly Santa Barbara bakery.
Mm.
And it was just like the most Santa Barbara thing I've ever seen. Like when I think of Santa Barbara, I think
Santa Barbara's great.
I think of that movie.
Yeah. We just took a day trip there not too long ago.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
You just
didn't
can
get
really,
shot, thank God.
But. Thank God. Well, we weren't hanging out near the colleges, which is apparently what you would need to do.
Well, you can't be hanging out where the angry white men are.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's, and when, you know where those places are, but Santa Barbara has multiple colleges, so it was at extra high risk, I guess, of having angry white men.
God.
The shooter in this case was Elliot Roger, who was a 22-year-old student at Santa Barbara City College.
Yeah.
And he had a history of mental illness that was not only documented just by the fact that he was going to see a million therapists, but his family had even called the police in the past couple years because they were just concerned that he was acting weird.
Yeah, the police had seen him, three times recently?
Because, times was because he made a citizen's arrest because his roommate stole three candles. So that was an odd one. And then another time, he called the police claiming he was being assaulted, and it turned out he was the aggressor.
Right.
So this was somebody that could have potentially been someone that they shouldn't have sold over 400 rounds of legal ammunition to.
Right.
Because that's how much he was carrying.
Yep.
When he killed three people in his home with, blunt objects.
Yeah, he did. Well, I think he said something about, because he wrote this, manifesto, and he also, had put, done a couple, videos and stuff. And
I think
he had, a lot of plans, and I think his plans were, He had a mass murder plan, and, his plan was, I think at one point he had said that, he was gonna, cut some people's heads off and then roll them down the streets and to show everybody that he
was a very bombastic manifesto.
He'd written a lot of crazy things that had been that he was sending to I think not necessarily friends of his, but sort of blog communities and that was one of the reasons why the police had been to see him once before too. I think because they had heard
his parents even are a member of his family reported that he was recording these weird YouTube videos, which we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah.
And was kind of writing weird and saying troubling things. Because after he left his house and with three dead due to blunt force, he went on a shooting spree and killed three people, injured, I think, 13.
Seven people.
Well, he was, the seven includes the three that he killed and himself.
Because
he then crashed his car into a bicyclist and then shot himself in the head.
In the head. Two guns to his head. One in his mouth and one to his temple.
Yeah, so he was not fucking around.
Wasn't going to mess that up.
No. But before all of this happened, he apparently made this YouTube video. This was his last YouTube video called Elliot Rogers Retribution.
Yep.
And he's sitting in the driver's seat of a car and promising retribution essentially to the women that were rejecting
were not
him because apparently he couldn't get a date.
Yeah. He was a virgin.
He was a virgin. Oh, I didn't hear that.
I think, wasn't he?
Well, I don't know.
I'm pretty certain he was.
I I guess, I mean, that was the kind of news that was getting reported about this case. A lot of random personal facts of random tangential people were getting reported, so I believe it. But, so he, this video, in his video, he talks about how lonely he is and then says that he's going to get retribution on everybody.
Yeah.
He also had written, though, this 140-page manifesto.
Yeah.
Which was about being angry with the world in general, but mostly about how he was
women.
Angry with women.
Yeah.
Because women were not, women were going for other guys and not him.
Yeah, well, they'd all taken a pact to not sleep with him.
Right, obviously. That's what women do.
Yeah.
That's... Mm-hmm. We're all in on everything.
Yep.
He had been diagnosed with high-functioning Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
Though high-functioning Asperger's does not explain a proclivity to, like, buy 400 rounds of ammunition and kill everyone. So that, so obviously there was something more going on with him.
Right.
And then he'd also, the family lawyer said that he'd been the victim of bullying for most of his life. His father was oddly the AD on one of the Hunger Games films, and that got reported everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, like, this random line of every news story about this shooting that came out, which was, like, who cares?
Right. Who cares?
Random.
What does parents do?
Like, what? Like, and why do we need to, like, it's embarrassing enough to have your son commit a mass murder.
I think a lot of people
like, I don't feel like we need to, like, know his name and profession and place of residence and, like, you know.
I think a lot of the sort of, like, wacko right-wing fringe was sort of reporting it as, like, some sort of, like, you know, oh, he's... from a Hollywood family sort of thing. I think it was
Hollywood
like a, I think
does
it was like,
cause
I think it was a Hollywood I think it was a Hollywood liberal type situation sort of thing.
It's tough out there for a Hollywood liberal. Sometimes you just get frustrated with women because they won't go on dates with you.
Yeah, and you want to kill all
That's
of them.
That's right. But
it's a tale as old
as time. Well, and it is a tale as old as time because the shooting thing is something that we have to report on. Like, if we reported on every shooting like this that was happening, we'd be just daily reporting on random mass shootings.
Yeah, it's like when Huffington Post was basically doing that.
Right, doing that every day.
Yeah.
And, like, every day there was a story about some 2-year-old that shot his 5-year-old cousin because he was playing with a pink gun that was sitting in his mom's purse. You know, something ridiculous like that. I got oddly specific in that example, and I don't know if that was a real story. It must have been. But in any case, that's the scenario I see playing out when people get too close to guns. The media was not lacking responses, though, even though the only real response you needed was, like, let's stop this.
Yes.
But that wasn't the response that they had.
No. They've got a lot of time to fill.
They had a lot of time to fill. Fox News has a lot of time to fill.
Oh, yeah.
CNN has the second most time to fill, and they also filled some time. But Fox News, first of all, they invited a psychologist, Robbie Ludwig, onto one of their shows.
Robbie, R-O-B-I.
R-O-B-I, yes.
Untrustworthy.
The natural way that you would spell Robbie if you were an idiot.
Yeah.
And then, and Robbie suggested that the shooting must have been the result of homosexual tendencies.
Yes.
And asked, is this somebody who's trying to fight against his homosexual impulses? Is he angry with women because they were taking men away from him?
What?
It seems odd. he wasn't even getting the dates with the women that, like...
It's so bizarre.
That's a head scratcher.
Yeah, it's a head scratcher.
But also typical of some psychologist that Fox News would dig up.
Yeah. Another Fox News contributor. Eric Erickson,
who's a
total
fuckwad.
A known crazy person, claimed that Roger lived the very lifestyle the cultural left thinks men should live, and that his actions were a consequence of a war on masculinity. What?
Yes. You know how classic it is when men aren't allowed to be men. They have to deal with women trying to be men.
They have to shoot them.
They have to shoot them then. That's the only natural response to restoring their rightful place at the top of the hierarchy.
Yes.
And then Mark Furman, who's another Fox News contributor, was on Justice with Janine and said, look at the overarching lesson we have here. When you have somebody with this kind of mental disease, if you're going to stop the violence, it's only through incarceration of the person. And so the host asks if he means that mental health means institutionalization or jail.
Right.
And he says, it doesn't really make any
difference. Didn't matter. Just put him someplace.
Let's just incarcerate everyone with mental health issues.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where. Yeah. If we need to put them in maximum security jail, put them on death row. Who cares?
It doesn't matter.
Like, he's not worried.
Yeah.
We just need to put all crazy people behind bars. So that's a practical solution, care of Fox News.
Yeah. Oh, this is a good one.
Yeah. this is maybe the best one, actually, and it's not from Fox News, surprisingly.
Now to CNN.
Yes.
One of their reporters, Deborah Ferrick? I don't know. Anyway, twice. She did this twice. She didn't stop once.
Couldn't stop herself.
Compared Rogers' Manifesto to Charles Dickens' novel, David Copperfield, and said it was, quote, really well written, and she cited her background as a literature major.
So she would know. Now, most people who've read this manifesto agree that it's a crazy... It's, like, written like a crazy person would write it. Like, it's sure. like, really... Like, it's filled with hyperbole. It's filled with, like... You know, non sequiturs. Like, it's just sort of like the thoughts and rantings of a crazy person.
Yeah.
Which it literally
she
is.
She liked it.
But she felt it bared a lot of resemblance to David Copperfield, which is an interesting comparison to make.
Yeah.
There was also in this manifesto a discussion of one woman in particular who had, quote, given Rogers his intense fear of girls. The New York Post, because they're classy, published pictures of this woman and her name and her feet, like where she worked. And one of the pictures, she's in a bikini. Like, and then the Daily News did an article on the same topic and just blurred her face in the pictures. you could get the name from the Post.
Well,
sold right next to each other everywhere. So there was no need for anyone to read the Daily News that day.
Well, I think we all need to know who she is because she's obviously responsible for
right.
this.
Right. Exactly. Women, you know?
I mean, she should be
known. You just can't stop them.
Yeah.
They're up to shenanigans.
No, well, they're predators.
Yeah, they're predators. They're just standing around looking like women.
Yep.
And poor, unsuspecting men...
Not sleeping with people.
...are not being slept with and are developing a fear of women as a result. Yeah. And then they're having to go on shooting rampages.
She's walking around in a bikini?
America,
the fact that she thinks she is.
America had no choice but to sell that man 400 rounds of ammunition.
Yep.
Let's be clear about
yep.
that, right?
Yep.
I mean... And in any case, there was actually a really well-publicized press conference given by one of the victim's fathers, which was... Challenged the NRA, on their totally destructive laws or totally destructive stance on gun laws, and the National Review like totally jumped on him and said that guns are not to blame for this and blah blah blah. And Keith, is it Ablo or Ablo?
I don't know.
No one knows because we don't watch anything that he's on. Ablo said that this father Richard Martinez is the problem with America while he was on Kill Meet and Friends. So that's a supportive.
Yeah. I'll tell you who the problem with America is. It's fucking Joe
the Plumber.
That's who it is.
First of all, where did this interview... Like, I know that he wrote an open letter. That's fine.
Yes.
We could write open letters all day long if we wanted to.
Yeah.
They certainly wouldn't make it into Huffington Post or any other news source.
No.
Joe the Plumber's open letter, though, was just everywhere. People were just, you know, caring.
And the big takeaway from his open letter was he said, quote, as harsh as this sounds, your dead kids don't trump my constitutional rights. Mm.
He said that after a long paragraph about how he has kids and it would be really tragic to lose them and all of this heartfelt sentiment about his kids. And then, don't worry, your dead kids don't trump his constitutional rights.
But your constitutional right is not to kill your kids.
Right. No, exactly. It's curious that, I mean, it's clever phrasing to some degree. I thought it was even... more clever when he blamed Richard Martinez, who was the father that gave this press conference, said that his speech will be, quote, exploited by gun-grab extremists, as are all tragedies involving gun violence and the mentally ill by the anti-Second Amendment left. They're coming up with some real, like, terms for things that I feel like are much cleverer than they used to be. They used to be real clunky to talk about Second Amendment stuff with the right. They just, like, didn't know what they were saying, and they sounded insane. Now they've got, like, gun-grab extremists and stuff. Like, that's an exciting term for something that's not real.
Right.
But in any case, he had to clarify...
It would be if we had our way.
That's true. He had to clarify, though, because he wrote this open letter to the parents of the victims, and then someone reminded him that three of the victims were killed by blunt force in the house and were not, in fact, the result of gun violence. So he had to clarify that this open letter was only to the victims of the shooting.
Just the people who got shot.
It's too bad about the other people.
Right.
He really feels for them.
Yep.
But screw you for getting shot in America. Everyone else.
Yep.
Michael Moore, meanwhile, was sort of like... He did the Facebook equivalent of, like, putting your hands on your head and shaking.
Right. He had the best reaction, I think, because... And a lot of people were passing this around. But, like, you know, I mean, he sort of... He's one of your go-tos.
He warned us, like, that this would happen.
Right, exactly. Like, a long time ago.
Yeah.
So he's, like, your go-to, like, when you want a reaction about, like, one of these tragedies, which are now happening too much. And he basically said that, too. He was pretty much washed his hands of it.
Yeah.
He's done.
He said, I no longer have anything to say about what is now a normal part of American life. Everything I have to say about this, I said 12 years ago. But then he did have a lot more to say about
it,
as you might imagine.
He went on. Yes.
But I thought that this was sort of like the most kind of relevant piece of what he said. He said, we won't pass the necessary laws, but more importantly, we won't consider why this happens here all the time. When the NRA says guns don't kill people, people kill people, they've got it half right, except I would amend it to say this: guns don't kill people, Americans kill people. Enjoy the rest of your day and rest assured that this will all happen again very soon. Which is the very sad truth about what, because that is what happens. Every time one of these shootings happens, we're like, shocks, horrors, this can never happen again. Oh, we don't care.
Well, and I think that his sort of like point in talking about that, because earlier in the piece.
Oh, yeah, he also talks about the fact that this doesn't happen in other countries.
This doesn't happen in other countries, and I think that we sort of like, you know, we often debate like why this happens so much, and a lot of people say it's because of video games and movies, and a lot of people say it's because we have more guns, but he sort of disputes, you know, I mean, Canadians have
a lot
more
of guns
because, but they're all just only hunting with it and
right.
hit with them, and they're not killing each other all over
exactly.
the place. The entire rest of the Western world is playing the same video games and seeing the same movies that our kids are. So it's sort of like
larger cultural issue. And more to the point, it's problematic that, because this has happened in other places. I mean, I remember the last time we had a massive shooting, we talked about Australia, where they had a mass shooting, and they immediately cracked down with a ton of gun laws, and it's never happened again.
They haven't had
one since. And that's what happens in reasonable countries.
Right.
You know?
A problem exists. You try and figure out what to do to make it not happen.
You figure out what to do to fix it, and we're sort of stuck in a thing where we can't fix it.
Yeah.
So, this keeps happening. We keep selling mentally ill people 400 rounds of ammunition.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Chris Rock told us that guns don't kill people, bullets kill people,
right, exactly.
Which is the ultimate truth of the situation. All of these things have one thing in common, which is that the killers, the crazy white men that are going on the killing spree, have an outrageous amount of ammunition.
Yep.
So, like, that's part of the problem as well. But, like, there are so many issues that we're just, like, not even addressing here that a reasonable country would address, and that's why it happens all the time here. But it did lend something to the topic of the month.
Yes.
Which is feminism, by the way. It's sexism and feminism.
Yes.
I was at a wedding this weekend, and it was literally all we talked about.
Yeah.
And I was shocked because this is all people... I mean, we all grew up in, you know, sort of we went to good schools. We, you know, all have good jobs or whatever. And all of us... I was shocked that this was sort of a widespread sentiment the way it was, where all of the women that we talked to had sort of like a concern about some form of kind of undercover sexism that was happening to them, sort of like more like cultural norms being sexist than anything else that was affecting their ability to get ahead at work.
Interesting.
And it's relevant because we've been talking about Jill Abramson, you know, for
yes,
the last
of course.
Month,
yeah.
you know, for the last few weeks. And also there was a really well publicized incident where Shailene Woodley, who's a sort of famous young starlet, was asked if she's a feminist, and she said that she's not because she loves men, which led to a discussion about how young women are maybe misunderstanding what feminism is.
Right.
And for a while, feminism really did become a bad word.
It
seemed like an extreme point of view. Like,
well,
we're
the right
all burning
still
bras.
Tries to use it as such.
Right, the right tries to sort of like make it seem like feminists.
Rush Limbaugh uses feminazis frequently.
Or like
daily.
That's a term
that he has
like
coined.
I mean, one of like, his things. But it's sort of gotten, you know, we've started thinking more about how sort of latent sexism affects people in the workplace, partially maybe because Sheryl Sandberg has this sort of band bossy thing going on, and we're sort of thinking about how women CEOs get ahead and don't. I don't think that's been the most successful campaign in the world for a number of reasons, but there's been a sort of interesting an interesting secondary thing that came out of this, where this other woman, who's a CEO of some online fashion chain, has started this girl boss hashtag that has also seemed to get a lot of press and is sort of maybe like the more millennial answer to the band bossy, because and we actually talked about this a lot at the wedding, where we were, you know, we were talking about a lot of the words that were used to describe Jill Abramson, and we were also talking about a lot of the words that are used to describe
effective. That's your new word, right?
Yeah. So all of the words that you use to describe women when you're trying to make people not like them, like, you know, abrasive and blah, blah, blah. We're rebranding those.
Pushy.
Mm-hmm. Rebranding those as effective.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are qualities that men can, are encouraged to have in the workplace.
Right.
And especially male bosses. But women aren't, because a lot of the problem we were sort of discussing at this wedding was that it's not that all women don't get ahead. It's that a certain kind of woman gets demonized in the workplace, and that makes it difficult for all women to get ahead.
Yeah.
It's not that there's not women that don't sort of break the barrier. It's that not enough of them do, because the kind of woman that competes with the men at their own game can't break the barrier, because that's the woman that's getting branded as aggressive,
exactly.
and, you know, abrasive and yep. all of these words. And that's the kind of woman that's probably also effective.
Yep.
So in any case, it's been a sort of interesting month, and it's,
yeah.
it's been especially interesting. I think in doing this podcast, I've thought a lot about, you know, feminist issues that I would have never thought about before, and would sort of proudly call myself a feminist anyway, but certainly now feel like there's a sort of larger connotation to it that is, you know, changing as
yeah.
these issues come up. But I have never had a discussion about sexism or feminism with, like, a single one of my friends
yeah.
that are, like, my own age and sort of at the same place in my career as I am. And I was shocked that all these issues had been on everyone's mind.
Yeah.
Which I think points to the fact that there's maybe a sort of larger discussion that needs to be had,
needs to happen, yeah,
that absolutely. Needs to be open. Because I think one of the things that, you know, I was talking about how to make change, you know, part of the problem now is that sexism is sort of difficult to prove, because it's not happening at the level
of, like,
we talked
about this last week,
right? Yeah, yeah. You're mm-hmm. a woman, I'm not going to yeah. hire you. It's happening at the level of, like, oh, I would just rather have somebody more like me.
Right.
And, you know, we were talking last week about how the editors at the Times probably used coded language without realizing it when they were talking
yes,
about Jill Abramson.
Yes, of course.
Even
I'm
if,
sure that they did.
Even if her firing was not an example of, you know, even if they weren't thinking about it in sexist, you know, in terms of gender, like, that, you know, that's probably just something that they were doing. But this has been interesting, because I feel like a lot of the guys at this wedding were, like, hearing words differently than they had heard them
yeah.
previously.
Well, no, and I think that,
it was literally just because it got mentioned. It was just because it was on everyone's
right.
mind.
Well, and I think about that a lot too, because even, I mean, well, I haven't until recently, because
right.
I think more for me than anything was probably this Jill Abramson thing.
Right.
Jill Abramson, Abramson thing.
It's very hard to say her
hard
name.
Hard to say, Abramson.
Yeah. Like, why is
yeah.
it so hard?
I know, right?
It's got one
but
more
I,
syllable than it should.
But I mean, I think it sort of, like, caused me to think about how, you know, I would talk about women that I work with, even
right.
in ways that, like, I don't probably even think about right. it. Like, I mean, I, you know, have people that I work with who are women that if they sort of, like, you know, act, you know, sort of like how probably my male bosses act
yeah.
all the time, I would probably say that they were being moody. I would
yeah.
probably say that. Where I would
right.
I would not ever say that my male bosses were being
moody.
I
no.
mean, I would maybe say that they were being an asshole. But
right.
I mean, I wouldn't, so, you know what I mean? But, like, even, like, saying somebody is moody sort of, like, implies
right. has a connotation
that, it's sort of
that they're, like PMSing.
There's right, exactly. And, like, it's not even a
women's
thing
emotions
that, like,
can't be trusted.
And I don't think that we have to be, like, so over the top PC about things like this. And
no.
I was talking with you and your friend Cara
right.
about this, and I was like, well, what if a woman is actually just a fucking bitch,
right.
you know, like, can I still call her a bitch? Because I would call my male boss, I would call
right.
my male boss an asshole,
right?
But I mean, like, I think that people do really, and
people talk in coded language without realizing
and
it,
and
women do it to each other all the time.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, I mean, it's not just something that men are doing; it's just part of the cultural norm,
yeah.
Of the workplace. And I think it's sort of, it's, you know, we've come a long way in very visible ways from
sure.
you know, this sort of pre-feminist era
yes.
or whatever, you know, from
right.
the 60s or, you know, from the time that women, like, had to wear skirts to work and things
right.
like that.
Exactly.
There's a lot of ways in which, but
yeah.
there are subtler ways in which it's just difficult as a woman to exist in an environment where people just aren't taking you as seriously and you can't put your finger on why.
Right.
And, you know, it and where getting ahead requires socializing with in a boys club where they don't
yep.
really want to socialize with you.
Yeah.
And those are all things that you can't, you can try to change the corporate culture to some degree, but to some degree part of it is just, like, making people acknowledge that it's happening, and maybe they won't, like, change their behavior in way, you know, at the moment.
I think so too.
But I think part, you know, they just have to, like, know that they're hearing it. I mean, I think, like, I work in an office that's all men,
yep.
and I'm the only one who ever sort of offers anything from a female perspective because of that, obviously.
Yeah. sure.
But, you know, when we talk about pop culture and things like that, a lot of the time I have a very different read on what's going on, and it's just, and I think that it sort of broadens the discussion so that people are thinking about it. It's not necessarily that anyone had negative intentions going into
sure.
the conversation of, like,
right.
saying something misogynistic.
Right, of course.
It's just sort of like they didn't know that they were thinking that way.
But I think it's heartening that you were having these conversations
this
weekend with people who
so excited and impressed.
And
that
I think
this
it's interesting
happened.
Too, because, you know, this there's, what is it? I think that there was a poll done recently that more women than ever are considering themselves feminist. Now, what that means to them is
changing.
Who knows
what
it is, because Shailene Woodley obviously doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about. But
she's
not one of the people who identifies herself as one.
There has been this sort of, like, history of, like, young starlets trying not to be considered feminist because they don't want to... And I think it's part, you know, there's this sort of idea that feminism is, like, angry bra burning.
Right,
like, some
exactly.
of us want to keep wearing bras because it's more comfortable. Like, you know, you know, you can't be called a feminist if you want to, you know, like, that sort of concept of feminism is still very strong in pop culture because Hollywood is perhaps politically not right on the times.
Sure.
A lot of the time. And, you know, young, if you're young and you're not educated on the topic, like, you don't know.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, this happened to Beyonce, where she got into hot water for saying something about not being a feminism, and it caused her to look into it, and now she's, like, got, like, a whole bunch of very openly feminist songs and speeches and, you know, things she's written online.
Yeah.
She's, like, she's very much changed her tune, and it was because she got into hot water for saying she wasn't a feminist at one point years ago.
Right.
So it was just, it was a learning curve.
right.
But, and it, you know, it's going to mean sort of different things to her than it would mean to women in 1960, but it's been exciting.
Yeah.
It's been exciting, so we want all of our listeners to be thinking about feminism.
Yes.
It's the month of feminism.
That's right.
That's it.
One thing who would probably not identify himself as a feminist.
Right. Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson.
Anti-feminist.
Yes. Because this week...
Who are these women that are calling his show for marital advice?
Don't be doing that.
Like, don't do that. If you're a woman and you need advice on a marriage or household-related issue...
Don't call Pat Robertson.
There's literally...
So many places to go.
Any other person in America is better qualified to help you.
Strangers.
I mean, on the street.
Yep.
Like, children.
People who have been divorced 100 times.
Ray. That's Brent's dog.
Yep.
More qualified to help than Pat Robertson in this regard.
But anyway, a woman stupidly called his show, and said that her husband is always pointing out whenever he's helping her around the house, as if he's sort of like it's a big favor to her, and she was wanting to know what it was that she should do.
She was like, it feels like he's doing a favor to the family, not me personally.
Yeah. So Robertson
apparently that's wrong.
Didn't actually probably tell her exactly what she wanted to hear, because he said he's saying I love you each dish that he's watching.
Right.
He's saying, Terry, I love you. If you understood that, you say, darling, I've got a treat for you until we get behind closed doors, and you'll see what treat I have for you. I don't know if he read it in a sexy voice like that. I don't know if that voice was sexy. It might have been a very unsexy voice to everyone. I don't know.
That is sexier than your usual voice.
Right. Sure. So anyway, so because he's doing the dishes,
she
should be putting out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's more so than he is doing her a favor, and not just to the degree that she should thank him. She should thank him with sex. That's the only proper way to thank him for doing the dishes.
Yep. That's it.
Because that's her job, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, I don't.
Yep, spread them. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. Do the dishes, then spread them.
Yeah.
So Pat Robertson, not qualified to be a marital therapist of any sort.
Nope.
Is not out there getting the news, like everyone else, about all of the sort of, like, latent sexism that women are facing in this day and age.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Moving on.
Some Benghazi news.
We have Benghazi news, yeah.
Yeah.
But we told you last week about the fact that they're starting this committee.
Yes.
Another committee, because we don't have enough of those.
Right. So that's about to start. All of the people have been named to it. We'll get to that in just a second. But a curious thing happened, because Daryl Issa has been the one who has been sort of leading the charge on this whole
Right. He had the
Benghazi.
Last committee.
He had, right, exactly. And he
is sort of a one-man committee.
He is. He's the go-to. And, like, all of the sort of information that, like, comes out is oftentimes, like, a leak from Daryl Issa's office. Like, he sort of is, like, really leading the charge here, or has been anyway. Well, he's not heading up this new committee, Trey Gowdy is. And I think probably they couldn't have him be in charge of this one because he did the last one. And also, he sort of is,
I think, there's no justification for needing this one if he's in charge, because they've already done that.
Even to John Boehner, I think Daryl Issa, at least on this topic, probably seems like a little toxic.
Yeah.
And it just, like, he can't be involved if people want to take the thing seriously.
Right.
So he did an interesting thing, because what he did was he, again, released some documents, or, like, a report, basically, that said that the Obama administration, as soon as the attack on Benghazi happened, were trying desperately to get YouTube to take down this video, that crazy video that we talked about, like, that was, like, very shoddily put together.
Right, it had actors from LA and stuff on it.
That, you know, that was very anti-Muslim.
Right.
And so Because
they thought that that was
right. Because right after the attacks, like even the next day, you know, that was where Susan Rice sort of like got herself into trouble because she said it was because of these movies. And so the Republicans' narrative the entire time is that the White House knew that it didn't have anything to do with this YouTube movie, and that they always knew that it was a terrorist and or terrorist attack, and they could have stopped it. And that was even the whole thing in the presidential right. debate, where like Mitt Romney was like, Obama never called it a terrorist attack, and Candy Crowley had to correct him. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Basically. Yeah. Okay. So by doing this, Daryl Issa basically just sort of like threw their whole conspiracy theory right. out the window.
He admitted that the White House sent right. a very sincere email to YouTube right. trying to get them to take down a video, and the release makes it look right. like the White House legit thought right. that was the cause.
Now, what he is claiming is that he says that it just proves that the White House set up a false narrative about what happened. Yes. But, like, for that to have actually been the case, like, they would have had to have
had a pretty hilarious conversation amongst themselves.
Like, amongst themselves. And also, like, a fairly elaborate plan to, like, make this seem like it was actually right. the case, where they called YouTube just to make it seem like they right. wanted them to take it down, even though they secretly knew it was this other thing.
Also, and,
like,
that whole narrative was so ridiculous to begin with. That
well, right.
there's no way they could have made that up. It right. was, like, when you see the video, you're like, okay, guys.
Right.
Like, everyone who saw the video was like, well, this is absurd. Yeah. So there's no way that was, like, a made-up plan.
Right.
Like, no one was like, what if we found a really poorly produced video that seems vaguely anti-Muslim, and right. we'll stick that in as if that's the cause of the attacks, but really, right. like, there's no way that happened.
No.
It's obviously the result of a government scrambling because they don't know what's happening.
Right.
Because
yeah, and
they don't know that the attacks are coming.
They're trying
to explain
any method
yeah.
to get them
to stop
to not
it.
To stop. Right,
yeah.
exactly. Or to, because I think this was actually even after that attack. I think it was to try and,
to
you know,
stem the sort of blowback. Yeah.
Right, exactly. In the Muslim world.
Exactly.
Basically. So anyway, but a lot of people were sort of scratching their heads as to why he would do this. And like, literally the only reason that anyone can think of that makes even any sort of logical sense was to undermine this new subcommittee.
Yeah,
or this
he's
new
pissed
committee.
That he's not on the committee.
Yeah, because it really doesn't make any other logical sense at all. There's no reason to do this other than to sort of like...
Beyond the fact that he's a man with no rhyme or reason.
Well,
but
he's
been fairly consistent on this one point.
Right.
This wrong point that he's been trying
basically
to make for
like
years.
Basically just like snubbing John Boehner and Trey Gowdy.
Which
is sort of hilarious.
People who are not snubbing John Boehner and Trey Gowdy, though, are the Democrats who appointed five very legit Democrats to this committee.
I was a little, not upset initially, but like they are very legitimate. I was just secretly mad that they didn't put what's-his-name on it, who we talked about last week, the crazy guy from Florida who said he wanted to be on it. Remember, I was like, I want them to drudge up all the crazies.
Yes.
They didn't do that, but they did... bring
they
out
put, they brought
the heavy
out the foreign policy heavy hitters.
The heavy hitters. And specifically Elijah Cummings, who is going to be the ranking Democrat on
right.
the committee. And he has sort of like been the Democratic foil to Daryl Issa and the Republicans
right,
on
this whole time.
He's the one who like gets into the sparring matches with them.
Yeah.
Like whenever you see the sort of back and forths going on, like it's usually with Elijah Cummings
yeah.
and someone.
So they put the Democratic version of Daryl Issa on the committee.
Right. Because there was sort of like some decision-making on her part as to whether she was even going to sort of, like,
that's
legitimize...
Pelosi
yeah. yes, excuse me. To legitimize this committee at all
right.
by putting anybody
on it. And that was a controversial...
It
was a pretty controversial decision, ultimately, amongst the Democrats.
Right.
Not everyone agrees that this is the right strategy.
Right. But I guess she figured if she was going to do it,
she might as well
just, like...
Right.
Like, don't put
if
five bumbling hacks on it.
In the
I
committee.
Mean, like, right.
Well, and I think they wanted to make sure that there was a way to combat... Like, that they put people who really knew their stuff on the committee, so there was a way to combat the sort of misinformation that's likely to leak out of this
right.
committee anyway, because Benghazi is a story that's entirely made up, so it's filled with lies.
Right.
And the Republicans, when they release information, are always releasing it in such a way that it seems to say something that's not true.
Correct.
So they wanted people on the committee who could be like, okay, everyone,
right.
listen,
America. Let me explain this to you.
Let me explain what happened.
Let me fact check this
yeah.
for you on this live on the spot.
Exactly.
Here. Yeah.
So they wanted to keep everyone sort of... on their toes on
right.
the committee. But yeah, so they put Adam Smith from the House Armed Services Committee. They put our Congressman,
yeah.
Adam Schiff. Who's on the Intelligence Committee. Tammy Duckworth is on the committee, who
she's a war hero.
She's the war hero, yeah.
yeah.
uh-huh. And then Linda Sanchez, who's also a California Democrat, who's on the Ethics Committee, was also put on that. Meanwhile, the Republicans put like a bunch of loon bag randos. Like none of their people
yeah.
have foreign policy experience. A couple
yeah.
of them are like prosecutors, former prosecutors. But it's all just, like, rando Republicans from
yeah,
nowhere.
I haven't even heard of any of these people.
No. Martha Roby.
Peter Roskam. Jim Jordan, Mike Pompeo. Like, I don't even... This is like a who's who of...
Yeah.
It's like a clown
Lynn
car.
Lynn Westmoreland is the deputy chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee.
Okay.
But that's about guy, as impressive as it gets. That's yeah. A, yeah.
Male Lynn.
Male Lynn.
Yeah.
I know. I was like, oh, well, they put two women on the committee. No. Didn't do that. Mm-mm. Unless Mike Pompeo is a woman. Yeah. Which you never know in this day and age. But you do. But so in any case, the Republicans are not coming to play the way the Democrats are coming to play.
No.
Which is funny because this committee is going to be oddly balanced, given that they have all these heavy-hitter Democrats on a committee they don't believe should exist.
Yeah.
And a bunch of joke Republicans.
Well, I hope these five Democrats really just pull
tell us the real story of Benghazi, which is a terrorist attack that no one understood at the time and no one saw coming, that was not some sort of grand plan by the Obama administration to do whatever they were...
They think they were up to.
It's
yeah.
It's hard to know what the what the larger message of the conspiracy has ever been.
Yeah.
But in any case, we're hoping that this issue can be put to rest.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
oh boy,
this whole being appointed to this committee is apparently a pretty suspect move for if you're according to Alan West.
Yes.
He specifically was talking about Tammy Duckworth questioning her loyalties.
Alan West making his triumphant return to the podcast too, by the way.
Thank God.
Actually, I think we've talked about him recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he's been getting the airwaves.
Back in the game.
Yeah, back in the game.
Yeah.
He's not doing anything. Like,
no.
Might as well.
He's not doing anything smart. Because if you're going to attack any of the five people
like, don't pick
for their
Tammy
allegiance
Duckworth.
To America, don't pick
don't
the
pick
one
the
who
legless
like,
war
had her
hero.
Legs blown off in the war.
Right?
Like, that's not what you, that's not who you pick.
That's not the right person.
But that's who he went with.
Yeah.
Because he says... he said of Duckworth, when sort of asked about the Benghazi committee and the Democrats, he said, I just don't know where her loyalties lie. You know, for her to have been a veteran, a wounded warrior for the United States Army, she should know that this is not the right thing.
Being appointed to a committee that she was not, like, actively seeking her. Like, this is, like, when being appointed to the committee is not the same thing as actively seeking out membership and being elected to the committee. Yeah. Like,
yes. But he just thinks that she has allegiance to the liberal progressives of the Democratic Party and maybe not... The country.
The country, yes. Mm. You know how those liberal progressives are not part of the country. Exist in a different place.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Canada.
Well, we're un-American.
We're un- Yeah, well, obviously, yeah.
We're not
patriotic.
No.
How could we be?
No.
How could we be if we're thinking Benghazi isn't a conspiracy?
God, I know.
It's like, how could you do that?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you may have thought that the Ukraine situation had boiled over because we didn't talk about that last week, I don't think.
No, it was it was busy getting worse.
Yeah, you'd be wrong because everyone in Ukraine is dying, in East Ukraine specifically. They were already obviously having some instability issues over there, as we've known for months. But it's sort of gotten to be like borderline civil war type clashes.
Yeah, because basically, well, they had an election recently. They elected a candy baron, which is... fantastic. A billionaire.
Usually the right choice to elect someone involved in candy.
Yeah. But, like, people were mad that there was sort of, like, an election going on because there's all of these, you know,
there's
these insurgents
sort of...
and they don't sort of, like, you know, they don't even think that they're sort of, like, that the Ukrainian government is valid, basically, and they're trying to, I mean, that's sort of, like, their whole thing is that they're sort of, like, you know, they're basically Russian separatists. So, like, the election sort of didn't really
go over.
They didn't really participate
in it.
No, and they didn't. Yeah, exactly. So,
There was a very decisive winner.
Yes.
So they were extra pissed because it's clear who won, and they didn't want anyone to win because they didn't want to be involved.
Right, exactly.
They're just pissed that they had to be
involved.
So, in
the, what is it, Donetsk, I think, or something?
Yeah.
So there was, like, a major, like, standoff at the airport, basically, where all of these insurgents, basically. Well, oh, and the other thing that's happened, too, is that for a long time, Ukraine wasn't really super responding to, you know, these insurgents.
Right.
Because
they
didn't want to start a civil war, basically. They've really stepped it up.
Yeah. Well, it's been going on a long time, and it became clear that Russia was, in fact, behind a lot of these attacks. So I think they were sort of like, okay, wait a minute. If it's actually going to be Russian forces, then that's a different thing than just Ukrainians wanting a voice.
Right, exactly. But the Ukrainian military is finally, like, they're sending out fighter jets, they're sending helicopter gunships, heavy artillery. Like, they're finally coming to play. Like, they're, you know, bringing their A game here, trying to get this
the
done.
Gunships have
but
come out.
Unfortunately, that just means a lot of people die. Like, I think they're saying up to 100 people died. I think
they know
of 40 anyway.
But that's...
And that was at this sort of, like, you know, day and a half sort of standoff at
the
airport, which is, like,
the
second largest airport.
In the last couple of days, like, the number was just increasing rapidly.
Right. And the mayor of Donetsk has been telling people, like, not to go out at night and stuff. Like, I mean, like, you're...
Sounds like no one should go out at any time of day.
There,
it sounds
basically.
Terrible.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people are hoping that this new government is going to be able to figure things out. He sort of is known as like a, he's not just a candy baron. He's
a politician.
But he's a politician. And he sort of is known to have sort of like an even hand, which was why a lot of people thought that he sort of won so decisively. Yeah. And he sort of like does have allegiance to the West, but he also sort of like understands that they have to be able to exist with Russia. And like
he wants to sort of repair the relationship with Russia to some degree.
That was sort of like what his candidacy was, basically. So, it doesn't necessarily seem to be happening immediately right now, but he also hasn't taken office yet either. Right. But, you know, it's not great there
now. It's not great what's happening. No. It's not ideal.
No.
And it does not seem to be getting better.
No, it's not.
So I'm not really sort of sure. I mean, I don't know what you do with a situation like this in a place like East Ukraine, which sort of has vague separatist ideas in some of the population, and they have this example of Crimea where they did sort of decide to, like, it's like, so it's like, it's a complicated question because they really do have to maintain their relationship with Russia just to get these problems to stop, because Russia has to respect Ukraine's right to exist.
Right. And it's also like, it's one of those things.
It's like,
it's one of those things too, where like you can't really necessarily, like, you don't obviously want to start a civil war.
Right.
So you're not trying to necessarily like kill a ton of your own people.
No.
But you're also like, who
are these Russian separatists
but by killing all of them either, like, you're not necessarily trying to start a war with Russia either. Because, that's bad news.
Exactly.
So it's a tricky situation. Yeah. Because what do you do?
Yeah. Well, and with the knowledge that Russia had been intervening in Crimea and in other regions, it's sort of like,
and Russia's claiming that it's not them,
and they would help
get these people out of there.
Right.
But they're like,
at this point, that seems to be a fake offer. So it's sort of, but it's unfortunate that this has sort of like become so violent, because at least initially, it was just like sort of bloodless protest for the most part. All of that other stuff was sort of scary because everyone was sort of threatening all sorts of massive things. But there wasn't like this sort of actual violent streak in it. It was just sort of like a few people acting out at protests.
Right.
And now it's like entering Civil War era scary.
Yeah.
Civil War era scary. Like there's an era that I'm recalling.
Yeah.
Like with the American Civil War. Like, what am I even talking about? In any case, another thing that has been happening over there.
Oh, God.
Over out in the world.
Yeah.
Obama makes this surprise trip to Afghanistan.
Right, this weekend. He went to the troops.
We're doing Memorial Day. He's announcing a drawdown again. Yeah. So he's like out Memorial Day, like saying hi to the troops in Afghanistan.
So unfortunately, he outed like our head CIA person in the region, basically, who's now probably going to have to be like removed from the country and their post, basically. People are comparing it to like
the Valerie Plame thing. Although that was intentional.
This was not, right. But basically what happened was they accidentally revealed his name, like, because he was on, they sent it out to like 6,000 journalists.
Yeah, he was on like a memo they sent out to like a zillion journalists.
Because he was included on a list of people that were like at a military briefing in Afghanistan, like with the president, and they just like didn't remove his name or like list him as like something other. They listed him as like chief of station, which is basically like that's the CIA person. Right,
that's
exactly
the word. So you call the CIA person.
But he's like basically the person who like deals with the government for the CIA there and like does sort of like, he's the guy.
Yeah.
The guy. So he's not the person whose name you want out there, like in a region in Afghanistan.
No.
That's just not what you want.
That's not what you're looking
for. So it was like a huge screw up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they were sort of
embarrassing.
It was embarrassing. They sort of like immediately had to scramble to, you know, they couldn't undo it. It was sort of like one of those things where like you can't do it.
They had to scramble to be sorry because that's all they could really do.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Obama did announce a drawdown.
Yes.
Which is exciting.
Right.
Also, every time he announces a drawdown, I'm sort of like, are we done yet?
I know.
I feel like every minute there's a drawdown being announced, and it's never all the troops.
Well, there's been drawdowns, there's been surges, there's been sort of, we go back and forth, basically,
with what's going on. There's so many activities going on.
And, well, I think partly the reason that you're confused about it, and I am too, is it's been going on for so fucking long. It's our longest war.
13 years.
I mean, other than sort of, like, our vague war on terrorism, like, the troops that we have had in Afghanistan, that's considered to be our longest, war.
This has been as long as our vague war on terrorism, too, because it started at the same time, and it's still both going on.
Well, it started a little later, which is suspect, because it probably should have started first, because we were busy invading Iraq for no reason before we got around to invading Afghanistan. But regardless...
It's been a... It's been a long process.
Yeah, exactly. But we're going to go down to, I think there's like 30-something thousand troops. I can't remember. I didn't pull that. But like now, we're going to go down to 10,000 this year. And we're going to keep those there up through like 2016, I think, to just sort of like have like, I don't know, just... It sounds like as if the troops that we're keeping there were just sort of like to give Obama cover with the Republicans.
Yeah.
Because they're still not wanting to like entirely pull out yet. So he's basically just sort of like leaving behind some troops. And then by 2016, they're all going to be out.
Well, and it's like at this, once you've had troops somewhere for 13 years, it's difficult to imagine life without them. I mean, it's like difficult because we sent troops there immediately. So there have been troops in Afghanistan since like the days after 9/11, basically.
Yeah.
And so figuring out how to sort of remove all of that from a country where we're almost part of like an institution there.
Well, right. And well, and the current government doesn't.
It's a long process.
And the current government doesn't want us to leave. I mean, part of the reason why we haven't, Karzai has not signed on to this.
A bilateral security agreement of any sort.
Right. Now, both of the people who are running to replace him right now have said that they will sign it, and they sort of were heartened by this recent announcement of the drawback. But I mean, like, it's been, you're right. And I think in this same speech, like, Obama was quoted, and I think this is sort of like a famous quote that people have been saying forever, but like, it's harder to end a war than it is to start one.
Right.
And he said that, and it's absolutely true. It's like, what do you do? And even as he's leaving people there, I mean, you've got the idiot trio of McCain and Lindsey Graham and Kelly Ayotte, like, talking about how it's short-sighted that he's, like, setting a timetable to leave, and that, like, what do you say? Oh, and it will embolden the enemies that are still there, and it's sort of like, well, what do you do? You don't just leave... You don't leave troops in every country that you've ever invaded until the end of time. I mean, that is actually sort of what we have...
Literally, that's been our plan so far.
Right, and that's actually been our plan in other places, too.
Yeah, right,
I mean,
exactly.
We still have troops in Korea, for fuck's sake. But, I mean, like, you know, I mean, it's...
They're staring at the North Korean border guards, just speaking English to each other, but staring into their eyes.
Yeah, but it's just sort of like, you have to set an arbitrary timetable.
Yeah, there's no other way to do it.
Any timetable is going to be arbitrary because, like, you can't account for the future. You don't know. Yes.
Exactly.
You know, of course. And, like, you know, people are already sort of, like, angry about sort of the state of things in Iraq. I mean, it's not going swimmingly over there right now after we pulled out of there.
But,
what are we supposed to do? He said
we have to recognize that Afghanistan will not be a perfect place, and it's not America's responsibility to make it one.
That's ultimately a
sentiment I wish that we had had years ago.
It's a very Rand Paulian quote.
Well, and I think part of it is like it's hard because we also went in there, and it's not the same as Iraq where we literally went in, destabilized the government, and then we're just like, we're here, we're gonna blow everything up, go us, and then we just left, and there was a mess. You know, in Afghanistan, there were already problems that were putting us in danger in the first place,
and we were
sort of intervening in a situation that had become dangerous for us because it was dangerous for them.
Right. We also went in there, not necessarily because we were going to war with Afghanistan per se, where in Iraq, we were intentionally trying to overthrow Saddam Hussein. Yeah. And like you said, you know, Afghanistan did have the Taliban, which was certainly a problem. And, you know, but like with them, it was more sort of like about like, you know, they were harboring terrorists. They were part more of the, you know, war on terror than they were necessarily Iraq, which was a war on Saddam Hussein and Iraq, specifically. Right.
Yeah. But this, every drawdown brings us closer.
Well, we'll get there at some point.
10,000 troops closer or whatever.
Yeah.
Or we won't get there at any point because we haven't seemed to yet.
Exactly.
This 13 years means that 9/11 was 13 years ago.
That's wild.
It's been a long
it?
Road, guys.
Yeah. Man.
We're still reporting on this.
Yep.
We were in high school and college.
Yeah.
We couldn't have been reporting on it at the time because we were not yet old enough to be reporting on things.
Yep.
Meanwhile, back to domestic politics, which is where we like to be.
Oh, this is a good one.
Mitch McConnell's race against Alison Lindegren Grimes.
Right.
Did I say that right? Yeah, I feel like did. I add an extra still.
You add an extra. No, it's what
that's
everyone
right,
does.
Right?
You want to say Lundergren.
Yeah, that's
right. I do anyway.
Yeah, of
it's
course
not,
you do.
It's Lundergren.
That's Lundergren Grimes.
Lundergren.
That's Lundergren Grimes. Yeah. You want it's impossible to say it right because it sounds wrong to say it right.
Yeah, exactly.
And anyway, the Lundergren Grimes McConnell race has been sort of heating up on the issue of Obamacare because Mitch McConnell obviously is a big foe of Obamacare.
Yes. Well, he won his primary.
And he won his primary. Which
that was last week.
So it's a disappointment to all of us. Congratulations. But he has, so he's been going around the state talking about how he would repeal Obamacare and get rid of Obamacare, blah, blah, blah. Which, P.S., good luck, because he is currently the Senate Majority Leader, so if he can't do it now, I don't see what's going to change when he gets reelected.
The Minority Leader.
Okay, I mean,
he would like to be the Majority
He's currently the Senate Minority Leader, but, like, right, they're not, he's not going to be the Senate Majority Leader unless terrible things happen terribly.
Well, he may very well lose.
Yeah, no, and
that race is a dead heat.
That race is a dead heat. But in any case, I don't know what he thinks he's going to change as, again, being the Minority Leader, is what I meant to say.
Yes.
And, he believes also that somehow Obamacare has this negative connotation in Kentucky, which maybe the word Obamacare does. The issue he's facing is that Kynect, which is the Kentucky exchange,
it's KYNECT,
which is really annoying, has been a wild success.
Yes.
So while Obamacare, that term, is not very popular in Kentucky, when he was asked whether he would keep Kynect or not, he gave a very vague answer that seemed
it's
to indicate
factually inaccurate.
That
too.
He didn't really understand how Obamacare works.
Right. Because what he said, well, yeah, he was asked specifically if repealing the healthcare law would mean Kynect should be disbanded, and 400,000 people are on Kynect. And he said, I think that's unconnected to my comments about the overall question.
Mm.
Which it's not.
It's not.
It's directly
that
connected
is a part of Obamacare.
It's the Obamacare exchange. Yes, it's the state exchange, but it would not exist if we did not have Obamacare.
Right.
Kentucky would not have just decided
to have
start
its own
Kynect.
Healthcare exchange.
Like, that's not what would have been going on.
And they wouldn't have been able to fund it with anything.
No, exactly.
It's being funded by
Obamacare.
The federal government.
Right, exactly. So, and he also went on to say something even more curious. He said, what I would have done instead is, first of all, tear down the walls, the 50 separate silos in which health insurance is controlled, and pit all the health insurance companies against each other in a national competitive market.
That's
a curious thing to say.
That's not what he would have done.
That's curious for a Republican who are always into the states' rights things and also not wanting the federal government to be doing anything when it comes to healthcare.
Right.
Granted, I understand that he's still talking about
private insurance
companies having competition, but it's just sort of an odd thing to say.
Well,
it's not
what he wants.
It's not what he wants. It's not what he wants at all.
Because private insurance companies don't want to expand their markets nationally so that they have to set prices nationally.
No.
Then they can't charge as much money in, you know, New York and California.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they will have this huge pool of people that will even each other out. Like, that's not what he wants.
Right. But it's very interesting, that race, because, like, it is a hot topic because, like, Kynect has been such a huge success. Like we said, it's got 400,000 people on it. But, a lot, you know, the majority of the state really loves it. And, like, obviously neither McConnell or Lonergan Grimes want to kick those 400,000 people off of it. But they also know that when people in Kentucky are asked about Obamacare,
they say
they don't like it. And that's probably due to the Bosch rollout. It's due to sort of like all of the other problems that sort of
came along with it. Kynect is getting known as Bashir Care.
Yeah, they're calling after their Democratic governor, which is sort
who's
of
like a real hero over there at the moment.
But like they both really don't know what to do with it because of this sort of like interesting like dichotomy with like you know Bashir Care and
Obamacare, which are the same thing, and no one seems to know
because Lonergan Grimes is having her own issues with this too, because like she obviously is out there like talking about how it's great all these people got on Kynect, but she's sort of like tempering that with this whole thing where she's like, I don't know if I would have voted for it in 2010 if I was in the Senate or not. So she is sort of like also trying to like toe this line where she's like
She's not openly supporting Obamacare, but she's like making sure people know about her love of Kynect, which is Obamacare.
Right.
It's very complicated.
It's weird.
It has indicated that no one in that race has any idea how health insurance works.
Absolutely.
It's a race full of people who are completely unfamiliar with health insurance as a concept.
I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say that she knows.
Right. She's playing a game.
Right.
Mitch McConnell
is an idiot.
Might not know.
Right.
He might not. It may be that he, because Mitch McConnell is someone who's old enough to remember the time that he was for this plan, that he was for Obamacare.
Right.
When it was called
so very confusing
something
for
different
him,
by the Heritage
because
Foundation.
Because he's like 1,000.
Right. So he sort of was like already having trouble because this was his proposal on healthcare 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Yeah, he
probably
liked
loved
this
it.
In the 90s.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So he doesn't know how to explain what he's for or against at this point because he's not clear.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, I think that this is... It's hope for Obamacare because obviously at some point the connection will have to be made because people will want to keep Bashir Care.
Right.
And if Obamacare goes away, they will not be able to.
Well, and I think
But it also, you know, it's sort of like how can we use this knowledge to make sure that people like Obamacare?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that I think is, I think that this is an opening for Lundgren yes. Grimes, because right. like if he is declaring that he's going to get rid of Obamacare,
and what she should like, be that she, means getting rid of Bashir care.
Right, that's what she should be out yes. there saying right now. She doesn't have to worry about what she would have done in 2010.
No, because she was not in the Senate at the time.
She only has to worry about what Mitch McConnell is saying right now, and what Mitch McConnell is saying right now would equate to all of those 400,000 people exactly. being kicked off
exactly.
Connect.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that she's smart enough to know this.
Do you think that she's smart enough to know this?
I don't know. Should we email her in the morning?
I think everyone maybe should. Email her. Email her. Why not?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
You're just going to end up on her email list anyway.
Yeah.
I'm already on her email list somehow. I'm like, how am I on her email list? How am I on Wendy Davis's email list? I don't live in these states. I unsubscribed from Wendy Davis's email list today. And I wrote that I'm a supporter, but I just don't live in Texas and I can't handle all these emails.
Right.
Because they email me like 7 times a day.
I know.
Like, I don't need their emails. I'm not going to fundraise for them.
Right.
I'm not going to support a race that's in a state that I don't live in that's like the one of the biggest states in the union. They can fundraise for themselves.
And you're also not going to support, bless your heart, Wendy Davis, a hopeless one either.
No,
I mean,
we've
talked
exactly.
about, I mean, she's, you know, she's doing the people's work over there. It's just not going to happen.
It's not
going to
be a great end.
So bless her heart, as they say in the South.
Right.
Like, I'm not giving you my money.
No.
It's not happening.
No. We have races here. We have Marianne Williamson running for...
We've got to defend ourselves against hippie gurus.
Also, June 3rd is the primary here. And if you recall, the primary is actually the general, because the general is a fake race that is a runoff between the two winners of the primary.
Right.
So it's like not even a real thing.
Right.
So like literally every person under the sun is running for office on June 3rd. And that's when we have to know who to vote for.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
I know.
We're not in the district where we can vote for that.
I'm so upset about that. So obnoxious. It's so obnoxious. And the district is so close, too.
It's so, I mean, well, it was our district at one time. It used to be our district.
Because, like, within blocks of, across the street, and I don't even, they might not even be in the right district, but I'm seeing
Marianne Williamson signs.
Literally, I can see a Marianne Williamson sign from my house.
Yeah. This is the kind of crazy hippie nonsense that's going on in California right now.
And
I wish that more people were writing about it, too. It's like a crazy movement.
Right.
It's just a weird concept.
Yeah.
Because it's very California.
Super California.
There's very few other places that this could happen in Berkeley, probably. There's very few other places that something like this could happen. This is just a really bizarre candidacy.
Right.
I'm sort of excited to see what happens, especially because I'm not invested because it's not my congressional district. So I'm sort of like, I'm mostly just pissed off that Waxman is leaving, and so I just really can't bring myself to care who wins.
The closer we get to this primary, the more I think that I would probably almost 100% vote for her.
I think I probably would too, given the options. But I think I would feel worse about it than maybe you would.
You probably would feel worse about it. I would feel weird about it. I don't know that I would necessarily feel terrible about it. But like the options in that, probably talk more about it as
We'll definitely talk about it next week or something.
Wendy Gruhl, like a boring.
Yeah, like I'm definitely not voting for Wendy Gruhl.
Like she's the only other sort of like even viable person there. Right. And she's like a boring Clintonite who like has already run boring campaigns around the city. Like, didn't she run for.
She ran for mayor.
She ran for mayor. And she's sort of like. Wake me when your campaign is over with, exactly. Wendy Gruhl.
She was the comptroller, like I think, and she was running on a fiscal responsibility. I was like, I don't want
to
hear that.
Go back to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Comptroll
up a storm. Yeah.
Stay
out of our campaigning.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm obviously not going to vote for Wendy Gruhl over Marianne Williamson, and everyone else in the race is bonkers.
Right.
There's no other legit candidates.
The thing that makes me, that gives me pause about her is just sort of like, I'm seeing a lot of people like post about her candidacy, and it's all under the sort of like, it's under this sort of like weird sort of like hippie guru vibe.
Yeah.
Which is obviously warranted because like that's what
people
she's been
are
doing.
Loving it here
but, like,
too.
When you actually sort of like.
But that's not
get
policy
to,
positions.
Right. But she has policy positions and they're.
They're vague though.
They're vague, but they're also sort of like vague ones that I can kind of like. You can run a vague campaign for
a U.S. love.
House race.
Yeah.
And like especially if it's about sort of like in California, you can run it on love and you can run it on like money and politics. And
those are
her two things. And I can get on board with that.
Sure.
If she wants to run all over the place talking about hippie crazy things and then on the other hand talk
getting
about
getting rid of
Citizens United and money out of politics, then like that's I can ignore the wacko nonsense.
Right.
And get on board with the other stuff. Yeah. Because what's Wendy Gruhl talking about?
Boring things.
She's trying to put you to sleep.
Yeah, she's trying to put you to sleep and probably save money in the process, which I'm like not trying to deal with.
Yeah, we got really off track. Sorry about that.
Back to the plan.
Well, yeah. Steve King.
Oh, boy. We got Alan West and Steve King into this podcast, by the way. It's really been an exciting day.
Yes. My home stater, Steve King.
That's right. He went on this like crazy tirade on the House floor.
Yeah.
It was about immigration, as you might have guessed, because
obviously.
Nothing gets him worked up like immigration because he represents a state that has, or a part of a state that has no people in it and does not have a huge immigrant population, I would imagine.
Right. Well, he's getting rightly personally blamed for the House not doing anything on immigration. Right. Like, it's
blamed because it is his fault.
Because it is his fault, right? Exactly. And so, like, people are sort of, like, personally blaming him. And one of the people who has personally blamed him is Chuck Schumer.
Right.
So, Steve King went off on Chuck Schumer. And also, like, just had, like, some crazy conspiracy theories that, that he was spouting.
This is an amazing speech.
Right. He said that, oh, what did he say? Oh, yeah, he said he has this whole theory about, like, that there's a higher percentage of real American citizens in his Iowa district than the Democrats have in their own districts, and that's why Democrats are plotting to boost their district's population with illegal immigrants. What?
Bonkers. Like,
I don't know what that means.
Like, you couldn't possibly know what that means. Like, there's a secret agenda in Democratic districts to get more illegal immigrants into them so that you can, what, have a lot of people who can't vote for you in your district?
That's it. You got it.
That's not a thing.
You cracked that code.
Right.
Real quick.
But he also said that Chuck Schumer represents the extreme outliers.
Mm-hmm.
And they are socialists, Marxists, progressives, and liberal Democrats.
I said to Lila, if he would have gone on, the next one would have been moderates and Republicans. Right.
Basically, fiscal conservatives. Uh-huh. Like,
yeah.
He just named all the things.
He started at socialist and then like he was...
Bounced to Marxist.
Right,
got serious for a moment.
I was going
to
say.
Looked us straight in the eye and then bounced right back to progressives and liberal Democrats.
He buried the lead there.
Right. Like, so true.
You start with Marxist.
You start with Marxist, obviously.
And then you work your way down from there.
Yeah.
But he also wants to have a duel
To have a duel. Not a duel where you draw weapons.
Not like a Zell Miller and Chris Matthews style duel.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There's been another... Hasn't somebody else challenged somebody to a duel recently? I feel like we talked about a duel.
I can't remember who it was, though. But
it's a lot of proposed dueling.
Happening more than it should be, I think.
I agree. Yeah. But he doesn't want to do it with swords. With swords? No.
Swords.
With
swords.
With swords. Or with guns.
Right.
He doesn't want to do it that way.
Right. He wants to do it with microphones within arm's reach.
Uh-huh. So he could still punch him if he wanted to. So
So he wants to have a regular old duel.
He really actually wants to have a duel, but he wants to do it under the guise
of having a microphone duel.
Right, uh-huh. He's going to trick Chuck Schumer into letting him shoot him.
That's like, I know that he's used to being the center of attention because he's a wacko crazy person.
Yeah.
Does he think it's wise to debate the man that shooming the verb was named for? Like, Chuck Schumer can upstage almost anyone.
Well, I know.
That's what he does.
I know. I think Steve King is probably jealous of that to some extent. They're similar styles of people.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, they're different types of terrible.
Right.
You know, because we don't have an extreme love for Chuck Schumer.
We're not in love with Chuck Schumer on this podcast, you may have noticed.
We certainly like him better than we like Steve King.
If we had to pick a duel winner, we like him a lot better than we like Steve King. Yeah. But we find fault with some of Chuck Schumer's...
Grandstanding.
And Steve King is mostly a professional grandstander. He's not a professional idea haver.
He's not a thinker. No.
He's not a thinker. He's not even really a closer. Chuck Schumer is a good closer. Like, he's the guy that, because he loves grandstanding and loves getting credit for things...
He can add legitimacy to something.
Kirsten Gillibrand will have an idea, and she'll do all the work, and then he'll come in and close and get all the credit.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of... He'll get you closed. He'll get it closed. Steve King will do nothing of the sort for you.
No.
He will mostly just grandstand and then sound silly and cause people to ridicule your party.
Right.
Which is what he's done here.
Yeah.
But so I'd love to see this duel. I think it would be one of the great duels in American history.
I do too. I don't even know.
There's no segue here. That's fine.
Sorry. Oops.
Couldn't do it.
But CEO pay in America. Congratulations, America.
Yes.
That's the segue.
We've done it.
We did it.
Yeah.
The average CEO pay has passed by, what, seven figures? It's up to over $10 million in 2013. It's up 8.8%.
Yeah.
It used to be $9.6 million in 2012.
That makes it 257 times the average worker's salary.
Mm, yes.
That's up from 2009 when it was only a mere 181 times the average worker's salary.
Yes.
That's really up from like the 50s or whenever it was when it was like six times the average worker's salary.
So their increase was 8.8%. The weekly wages for U.S. workers rose 1.3% in the same amount of time. So they're not doing quite as great.
So as you might have suspected, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer.
Correct. Yes. Well, they're getting richer. They're getting 1.3% richer.
That probably doesn't keep up with inflation.
No, I know. I'm kidding. Yes.
They are probably literally getting poorer in real money terms.
But you know some of these rich people are being like, look, haha, they got a raise.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like a fuck you raise.
Right. But yeah, because at this rate, the average employee would have to work 257 years to make what a typical S&P 500 CEO makes in 1 year. Guess what, people? Nobody lives that long.
That's right. Science is going to back us up here, I think, when we tell you that you will never make as much as your CEO makes in a year.
In 1 year.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
In your lifetime.
Nope.
Think about that while you're in your depressing nursing home that you couldn't really afford, that's bankrupting your children on your deathbed.
Yeah.
While your CEO pads around in their luxurious mansion with full-time medical staff.
Yep. Think about that.
Think about it.
Oh, God. This is a story that I have actually wanted to talk about for a while because, like, it's been an issue. So you probably heard a while ago, I think it was in April, there was, like, this terrible botched lethal injection in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
They then put a few people who were on death row, like, they... They halted executions because they sort of, like... didn't have this because of what had happened here.
Right.
And, like, basically what happened was, like, this guy sort of, like, convulsed for, like, 10 minutes. They had to, like, take him away. He died, like, an hour later of, like, heart failure, basically, because, like, the lethal injection didn't work.
Right.
Now,
they basically tortured him to death.
They tortured him to death, right, which is against the Constitution.
Right. That's against the law.
So. Yeah. So, but what had happened, we're sort of finding, and I guess this has been an issue for a while, but a drug cocktail is used for these lethal injections. It's usually like three
and
or four drugs.
It's not an exact science.
It's not an exact science.
Because nobody knows what the appropriate amount to kill someone is, because there's not a way to do extensive testing on what works on a person.
Right. So a lot of the drugs that get used, each state sort of like has their own sort of like, you know, special cocktail, their house cocktail.
Right.
Most of them are used... or most of the drugs are either produced or shipped in from Europe because the drug companies are either over
there.
There's a huge number
of big drug companies.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So a lot of these drug companies and actually like the governments of the countries where these facilities who are making the drugs have said that you can't send these to America. You can't send them to like state, you know, correctional facilities if they're going to use them for lethal injections.
Right.
So Europe is putting their foot down because, as you may know, the United States is like one of the last industrialized nations to like still be killing their own citizens.
Yeah.
So they're not having it any longer.
Right.
So states are having to sort of just like willy-nilly make up drug cocktails with new drugs that haven't been tested, and they're just like, they're testing them on inmates, basically, is what they're doing, and it's not going so well.
No.
Basically. So, that's a problem.
That's
cruel and unusual punishment,
right,
which is, like we said, against the Constitution.
Well, and it really brings to light the degree to which even using a cocktail to kill someone is not like a smooth transition. It's not like when you bring your pet in to be put down and they just sort of fall asleep. That's not what ends up happening with most people.
Right.
And this Oklahoma situation was an extreme example.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of reports of things less extreme, but still disturbing things happening on, you know, during these lethal injection proceedings.
Right.
So, in any case,
Tennessee
came up with a
quickly solved the problem.
Yes.
Just they didn't think twice about it. They didn't look back. They got it through the House and signed by the governor. Just in no time, they're bringing back the electric chair.
They're just going for it.
They're doing it.
They're not afraid.
No.
They were like, we had something that didn't work.
Right.
Didn't work once, but exactly.
Most states still have the electric chair,
right?
But inmates get to choose how they're going to die.
Right.
Nobody wants to use the electric chair because
that is actually cruel and unusual
punishment, which is why it doesn't get done anymore because it's sort of like one of those gray areas where it's sort of like this is maybe against the Constitution.
That is another type of that's another type of procedure that is not always successful. They sometimes have to do it more than once.
Yes, exactly.
And that is why I think it stopped getting used in the first place, is they had inmates who were not dying, and they were having to electrocute them multiple times.
Yeah.
And it, you know, there was a big case because there was one guy who they basically appealed and said that he had served his punishment because he got electrocuted and it didn't kill him.
Right.
And so that is why the electric chair went out of favor in the first place, is for the same reasons that this lethal injection situation has been halted in all of these states. But it's like cinematic style cruel.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So.
Yeah.
That's, they're, but they're, They're not afraid in Tennessee.
No, God.
Why would you be? These people need to die. What are you going to stop people from dying? That's crazy.
Yeah, well, they deserve to die.
They deserve to die.
Right.
We can decide that.
Yes, exactly. But obviously, people think that there's going to be, like,
a legal challenge of some sort.
Legal challenges
to this.
Well,
I'm curious if it's still something that is allowed, that inmates are allowed to choose. I'm curious whether there's some sort of precedent for banning it. Obviously, it's not banned yet.
Well, right.
Because they just sort of, like, couldn't make it the only alternative. Or it wasn't in fashion, at least, to make it the only... It's also interesting because there aren't a lot of states that are regularly executing people. It's not happening all the time in most states. It's only certain states that are coming up against this problem.
Yeah.
States like Tennessee and Oklahoma and Texas are having this problem.
Yep.
Like, New York State's not having this problem to a tremendous degree because they almost never put anyone to death in New York State.
Well,
like,
and
California is not having this problem.
We still have the death penalty here, and we actually even just voted to keep it, which, like, really pissed me off, but we're not doing it.
Right, we're not doing it anymore. New York State, you could only get it in the first place if you killed a cop, and they don't really carry it out anymore.
Yeah.
Like, most states that have somewhat, like, civil people in them have decided to halt these things. But this is going to be... I think sort of interesting because and maybe it will sort of revive the discussion around whether this is an appropriate thing to be doing in the first place.
And if
the discussion can involve the fact that European nations are not even willing to send us the drugs to do it because it's so cruel, then maybe we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that we should. I would also love it if, I mean, I wouldn't love it because this is, I mean, it's sort of a morbid thing to say, but, like, I would love Oklahoma's fuck up to be what really got us thinking about this. Because, like, it would just serve them right. Because they're awful.
Yeah, they're not helping anyone.
Or Tennessee's fuck up. They're not much
better. We, time and again, have to bring you examples of Oklahoma politicians screwing shit up for everyone else.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
Show them.
Yep, that's right. Oh, God. And in final head-scratching news, further crazy theories, birther crazy theories from Donald Trump.
Yeah, who now doesn't know what he thinks.
Couldn't possibly know.
He was recently at the National Press Club pontificating on topics of sorts. Yes.
Uh-huh.
And when you watch the clip, it's really like he's just sort of like talking off the top of his head about stuff. He's just hanging out at the podium. Just chatting.
First off, who knows why he was there?
Right.
And then they asked him if he regretted sort of like going this whole like crazy birther route because, you know, obviously we have a birth certificate now. So you would think that the answer would be like,
yeah,
perhaps.
Sorry about it.
Maybe that wasn't the best way to go. But that's not what happened.
He's not sorry.
No,
not
he's
even
not
a little bit.
Not even that's exactly what he said. Not even a little bit. But then not only that, he went on because he thinks that Obama may be from America.
Yeah.
But he also thinks that maybe he lied about being from Kenya so he could get into college.
Yeah. Somehow he's like projected. This is all projection because he's the one who said Obama was from Kenya, not Obama.
Right.
So he somehow in his mind is like, okay, someone said Obama was from Kenya. I know this.
Yeah.
Because I know it. Yes. I can't remember that it was me, but I know that it happened.
Yeah.
So, like, now that it's maybe okay for me to believe that he was born here, I know at some point he lied about this because I know at some point he said it. Someone said it.
Yes.
So now he believes that perhaps Obama...
he said it's very likely that he's from America.
Right. He just told his college otherwise.
Right, but he just... Yeah, exactly. Got a frog in your throat.
Choking. And on that note, I think we should end the podcast.
Well, we're done.
We're done.
So now's a good time to end it.
We'll see you next week.
We will.
Bye.
Bye.